sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Jen Glantz, author of the new book, Always a Bridesmaid for Hire. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Mavenah on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Today is Super Bowl Sunday, an American holiday, if ever one existed. What began as a football championship game has now grown to epic proportion. It connects our nation in a weirdly complete way. It almost doesn't matter if the actual football game is any good. Does anyone really remember that last year's Super Bowl was basically over by halftime and got worse as it went on? In any case, the Super Bowl is a monumental triumph for the exuberant commercialism of American sports and America in general. In contrast, we Jews have found inspiration, typically, in the natural world, and many of our psalms and prayers celebrate the great gift God has given us in this earth. But sometimes we focus a little more on that concept than at other times. You see, there's another holiday coming up, one very different from Super Bowl Sunday. This coming week, Friday night and Saturday, we'll celebrate Tu B'Shvat, the Jewish New Year for trees, kind of a Semitic Arbor Day. Do you remember Arbor Day? The Mishnah, codified in the year 225 or so, roughly 1,800 years ago, tells us that there are four new years every single year. A new year for princes, a new year for taxes, a new year for judgment, and a new year for trees. When the sap begins to flow in late winter and trees begin to come back to life, it's time to celebrate Tu B'Shvat, literally the 15th day of the Jewish calendar month of Shvat, a midwinter month. On Tu B'Shvat, we eat a variety of fruits and nuts, basically any produce that comes from trees, and we thank God for the goodness and vitality of the natural world with which we are blessed. It's customary on this holiday to eat from the seven species that grow natively in the land of Israel: figs, olives, dates, grapes, pomegranates, wheat, and barley, the Shivat Haminim. Tu B'Shvat is a festival designed to connect us to nature, help us rejoice in the beauty of the land and the graciousness of God in gifting us with it. In the 16th century, in the holy city of Tzfat in the north of Israel, it became customary to hold a Seder, kind of like the one we have for Passover, on this holiday of Tu B'Shvat. We drink four cups of wine, as we do on Pesach, only this time the cups of wine symbolize the four seasons of the year, rather than God's four promises of freedom, as they do at Passover. We use white wine, symbolizing winter, a blush wine for spring, red for summer, and a dark red for fall. All of this is a way to remind ourselves that the natural world is a gift from God, and we have every reason to appreciate it this time of year, as sap begins to flow in the trees and the earth gets ready for a new cycle of growth and rebirth. At Tu B'Shvat, buds begin to form, even during a cold winter. Well, as cold as it gets here in the Sonoran Desert where I live, and the life force that rises in the spring begins its move from dormancy to full vibrance, according to tradition, on this holiday of Tu B'Shvat. The more famous Seder in the Jewish calendar, of course, is the Pesach Seder in the spring celebrating freedom, but the Tu B'Shvat Seder, invented by the mystics of Tzfat in Israel, is a lovely additional way to connect with our heritage and with God. If you happen to be in Tucson, come to our Tu B'Shvat Wine Tasting Seder. We're tasting Italian kosher wines this Friday night. Just call Temple Emmanuel 520-327-4501 to make a reservation. Anyway, to play us in this morning on the theme of the natural world, here's Chava Alberstein singing Hagan HaBiladi, The Secret Garden. La 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 la
ושם נחיה מה שאומרים שירים של ערב חג וההיסטוריה תחייך ותנמנם בצד שוב אני אמצא בך תבונה וגם תמימות כי בידך אתה תחביא מפתח לליבי ולא יהיה אהוב ממך בגן הבלעדי
was Israeli singer Chava Alberstein and the lovely song Hagana Biladi, The Secret Garden, for the coming festival of Tu B'Shvat this week, Friday night, Saturday. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Jen Glantz, has had a most interesting and unexpected career, that of a professional bridesmaid. Meet her and hear about how that happened to her and about her new book, Always a Bridesmaid for Hire, when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. She's Jen Glantz, the author of Always a Bridesmaid for Hire, which has just been published. Very entertaining book. She's a blogger. And, well, let's let her tell her own story. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Hi, how are you?
So what kind of a job is this for a nice Jewish girl?
Oh, you know what? I went to so many Jewish weddings when I was in my early 20s. I was always the bridesmaid, so I figured, why not try to turn this into a job where I can do it for strangers?
So, you know, that's not a normal career track. Tell the story about how you suddenly decided, or maybe not so suddenly decided, that what the heck?
You know, it was a combination of noticing a gap in the wedding industry. And when I was a bridesmaid for my friends, I noticed that there was nobody behind the scenes who was there for the bride. If she had a wedding planner, that person was busy setting up the wedding. And if she had friends, they were busy getting ready for the wedding. So after one night when two friends asked me to be a bridesmaid at that same time, I decided, you know what? Let me see if I can be a bridesmaid for strangers.
Are there so many people that don't have, you know, a best friend, an older sister, a cousin, someone that they're automatically going to choose that they need to hire a bridesmaid?
You know what happens is a lot of times they have those people in their lives, but they want a professional to come in, answer any and all questions that they have, and take the dirty work off of their friends, because oftentimes your friends and family, they just want to have a good time, but weddings can be stressful and overwhelming.
How did you prepare for this? Like, what trained you to do this?
I think that I was a bridesmaid for my friends so many times, so I got the hang of it. I knew exactly what to do, what not to do, how to be there for the bride, and really how to turn this into something that brides really, really, really needed for their wedding. They needed that added value of support, because weddings can be very emotional. There can be a lot of pressure and stress surrounding them. And if you don't have somebody there who can help you with that, then sometimes you just go a little bit crazy.
What happened the first time you did this as a professional?
The first time I did this was for a bride in Minnesota. So I flew there for her wedding, and it was my way of testing out this concept to see if this was really going to be something I can make a business off of. And she hired me because she fired her maid of honor. So there was a little bit of tension that was going on between her and her bridal party, and she needed someone to come in and really just fix the day for her.
And how did it work?
I went there, I flew to Minnesota, I was there for her rehearsal dinner, I was there for her wedding, and then after the whole thing was over, I remember I was back on the plane coming home thinking to myself, wow, there definitely is a need for a business like this. I was able to change the life of this bride who really needed a female support system on her wedding day, and I remember thinking that I couldn't wait to do this for more people.
You know, I've heard that people receive Bride Magazine for an average total of 4 issues. We'll talk a little bit more about what it's like to come into somebody's life, be their most important person, and then basically disappear when we come back with Jen Glantz. Always a Bridesmaid for Hire is her new book. Hear about it when we come back on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends from Freedom Smoke, David and Pamela. You guys focus so much on your customers. Tell us why they're so important to you.
Our customers are extremely important to us. It's why we built this company. Our job is to get people to quit smoking, and we're extremely good at it. You can come in a very nice, comfortable lounge environment, try anything you want to try. You'll have knowledgeable and helpful staff that will be happy to get you or your family and loved ones to quit smoking.
We have 4 locations in Tucson, 1 in Catalina on the Pinal border, and our latest store has just opened in Sierra Vista.
And these are all lounges, sort of a comfortable environment for people to come in.
Yes, they're set up with couches and pool tables, pinball machines, video games, anything to help you along with your time.
What's the best way for people to find out more information?
They can go onto our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call our toll-free hotline for any information that you want, 1-800-705-7013.
And that number again is?
1-800-705-7013.
Thanks so much. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of 4 activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at tojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We were talking last week about the Jewish community of Mexico City. You were there recently. You had an interesting conversation. Would you share some of that with us?
Sure. And actually, this conversation ties together the themes of our last 2 conversations, anti-Semitism and the Jews in Mexico City, because there's a lot of ways of defining anti-Semitism. You know, it could be just violent hate crime. It could be a degree of discomfort with Jews. It could be a set of stereotypes about Jews. It could be many things. And this conversation was sort of borderline. I'm not really sure how to consider it, because I had dinner with two very successful young professional guys, actually not so young, they're roughly 50, one who lives and works in Mexico City and one who lives and works in Veracruz. And they both work really hard and they've done very well, and they're probably in the upper 1%, if not 10th of 1% of Mexicans in terms of wealth, education, fluent in English, well-traveled, they go to Europe every year, whatever. So they take us out to dinner, and somehow the subject of the Jewish community in Mexico City comes up. And I, in my then ignorance, which has since been filled in, said, so how many Jews are here? 10,000, 20,000? They said, oh no, hundreds of thousands. I said, wait, hundreds of thousands or 100,000? Oh, no, no, many hundreds of thousands. I said, okay, I'm not sure you're right. I can check on Wikipedia or Google or whatever. It turns out there are about 30,000, roughly 60% of the Jews in Mexico, the country, live in the capital, Mexico, DF.
Ciudad de Mexico.
Right. DF.
DF, right.
Distrito Federal.
Right.
So, you know, then I asked them why they thought there were so many Jews in Mexico City, being fairly sure that there weren't, based on my trip there many, many years ago when I worked for the World Union of Jewish Students. I had in my mind a figure of like 20,000. That's now wrong. It's more like 30,000, but okay. So they said, oh, they're everywhere. They control all the businesses. They have the best land. They have the best houses. And you know, they're not all rich, some must be poor, but there are hundreds of thousands of Jews here, and they control everything. So, to me, that's
kind of classic anti-Semitism. Really.
I don't know if it's anti-Semitism or just envy, but these are like very well-educated people who work in the business world, who obviously know some Jews and have some contact with the Jewish community, but who, as is the case in the U.S., I think, vastly overestimate both the number of Jews and the amount of things, activities, fields, whatever, that where Jews exercise control. And whether you want to call that anti-Semitism or envy or jealousy or just ignorance, I don't know. But it was a very revealing conversation about a type of, if you do consider that anti-Semitism, that's almost universal, that overestimation of the numbers and power and influence of Jews all over the world.
Yeah, we can talk about that next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome one of our Shin Shinim, representatives of Israel here in America from the Weintraub Israel Center, Bar El Kahar, who's going to talk about a fascinating part of Israel that lots of people in America don't know anything about.
So what I'm going to talk about today is the Israel Trail. And what it means is that from the north of Israel, from Mount Hermon at the top all the way to Eilat in the south, there's a trail of hiking and actually also of biking for you, Rabbi.
Right. Thank you.
And it's called the Israel Trail. And so I'm going to talk about the hiking part because that's what I love to do and what a lot of Israelis do. So the path is 940 kilometers long, and it weaves through all of Israel and goes. It starts from the north with some snow, hopefully, in the winter, and then it goes down all the way through the valleys, through some of the seashores on the Mediterranean Sea, and then down all the way through the Negev. And it's a really, really beautiful thing. What I brought it up is because when I was here in America, I was telling it to about a lot of students in the schools, and apparently they didn't know about it. So it's something I really wanted to push forward for you.
So are you going to do the Israel Trail?
Hopefully, that's what I'm looking for when I come back home from the Shin Shinim program. My friend who's doing a Shin Shin program in Israel as well. His name is Ido, and I'm really hoping to do with him the trail, the whole thing.
How long does it take to walk the Israel Trail?
Well, it depends on how fast you walk it. But
of course.
Yeah, I really want to do it on my own pace. But mostly, for the most part, since it's 940 kilometers, it takes you about 2 months, 2.5 months just to walk it. And the thing is about the trail, which is amazing, is that there are people called the angels of the trail. Mm-hmm. So there are people
so like
who
the Malachi
Malachi Ashvil. And they sit they live next to the trails, and they offer warm beds and they offer food to the people who want to. So people who just come and end their day's journey close to their house, so they sleep there where they can help them and give them some food and maybe some
maybe they can take a shower the road.
Yeah, hopefully after 2 months of not doing so. Yeah, and that's really amazing from Malachashvili. And there's one more important thing about the road, that it's really its symbol, that it has three colors. The first color is white for the north,
for the snow.
Yes, hopefully that you will see along the way. And then comes the blue, and blue is for the ocean, that there's 150 miles
of the
kilometers,
coast.
Yeah, of the coast.
Right.
And then after that, when you go more down, there's the whole Negev, which is more than 50% of the road. So that's orange for the Negev. So when you look at the trail, it's really, really moving to see all the three colors when you finished it. Since I have someone who I know who finished the trail, and he said it's one of the most amazing things he's ever done.
Well, I hope you can do it and complete it. I guess it'd be this summer when you go back to Israel.
Yes.
And I know people that have done parts of the Israel trail, but I don't know anybody who's done the whole thing. So really a fantastic experience. Thanks, Bar. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Rabbi.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates serving Tucsonians living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
And now we welcome a favorite mystically recurring feature, our Zen Judaism moment, the two Jewish haikus for Jews. Beyond Prozac, peace is knowing one's child is an internist. And a second haiku for Jews. Is one Nobel Prize so much to ask from a child after all I've done? That was our Zen Judaism segment, two classic haikus for Jews. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Good morning. Boker Or, everybody.
I was growing up, you went to school, right? School was public school, unless you were in cheder or, you know, a Jewish day school, which was a good thing, but it was not for everybody, that's for sure.
Right.
That is not the school landscape today.
It's not the landscape today, and certainly not in Arizona. I looked it up many years back, and, you know, Arizona had the most charter schools per capita than any state in the union. So school choice is really thriving here, and it has upsides and downsides. You know, if you know what kind of coffee you like, going shopping at the grocery store is a piece of cake. If you don't know,
or a cup of coffee.
That's right. With a Danish, nice Danish. But you know, there's so much to choose from, it can be overwhelming. And it's tough for parents who are getting into school age years, because there are so many options out there. So what do? You got to do your homework if you want to make an informed decision. And that means researching schools. It means visiting schools. The best thing you can do is find something that aligns with the values that you hold dear at home, and think about the outcomes of the education your child's going to receive. What kind of an adult do you want your kids to be? And what kind of values do you want them to carry forward, and then start doing your research. I will tell you that if you're interested in having Jewish grandchildren, THA is probably your best bet in town.
Jewish day schools also used to be very closely affiliated with one denomination. You had Orthodox day schools, then you had Solomon Schechter conservative day schools, and Reform day schools started.
Right.
The move has been to, in a broader sense, towards community day schools like Tucson Hebrew Academy.
Yeah.
Tell me how you guys deal with the diversity of Jewish views, secular, Reform, conservative, Orthodox.
Well, you know, one of those exciting things about Tucson is that there are lots of options, and there are lots of options for Jewish education, and we have strong programs from all, you know, all branches in the faith. But what's special about THA is that all types of Jews are there. Orthodox, conservative, Reform, unaffiliated, families that have blended or intermarried. And so, you know, we're a big tent and we take in everybody. And our approach is to love our kids and to welcome and embrace our families, and to continue to grow and foster a community that's about kids, and that's about producing kids who know who they are as Jewish people. Every family has their own beliefs and their own values. Many of them connect, but also many of them are very different. And so as we teach the kids through the years, we instill the concept of acceptance and appreciation and valuing, not just tolerating, but valuing other points of view, and encouraging kids, for example, to go home and talk about ideas, to go to their own synagogues and worship. And it's really that concept of embracing everybody and building them up where they are, and educating them as Jews, giving them more information, more tools, deeper understanding of their heritage.
Great Jewish values across the board. Thanks, John. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
David is telling a new joke to Yossi. Yitzchak and Jaime are talking one day. Right away, Yossi interrupts him, always with the Jewish jokes. Give it a rest. Why do your jokes always have to be about Jews? Just change the names to another ethnic group for once, will you, David? So David starts again. Okay. Hashimoto and Suzuki were talking one day at their nephew's bar mitzvah. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Journeys are centrally important in Judaism. The act of leaving and heading out into the great unknown is crucial for us. At some level, the proper theme song for Jews might be On the Road Again. Repeatedly in Jewish tradition, great leaders, or even the whole of our people, head out into the wilderness to seek God and make a new life somewhere else. It happened first with Abraham in the Torah portion of Lech Lecha. It happens two generations later with Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel as he becomes the founder of our people. It happens again with Moses, who flees his country of birth in Egypt to find God in the Sinai Desert, leaves there to go back to Egypt, and finally takes the whole people of Israel out of slavery in this week's portion of Beshalach, putting us on the path of redemption and freedom. And it keeps happening throughout Jewish history. The idea of the wandering Jew has ideological relevance as well as pathos. Wandering seems to be something we need to do, not just something we are forced to do. In particular, Jewish religious tradition has a peculiar perspective on the events of the Exodus, reaches a climax in this week's portion of Beshalach. It's true that the drama of Jewish history really begins with the story of the Exodus from Egypt and the escape from Pharaoh on the shore of the Sea of Reeds. It's logical we should focus on that. But in our prayers, practices, and traditions, we raise up this escape from slavery and heading out into the Sinai wilderness to the highest conceivable historical status, far beyond even what might be appropriate. It's not just the way we make Passover a central holiday. The preeminent festival of freedom should be focally important, but we remind ourselves of this exodus more often than that. In fact, every Friday night when we say Kiddush, we declare that we observe the Sabbath, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the exodus from Egypt. That is scarcely true, since according to our own Torah, Shabbat goes back to God's creation of the world long before the Exodus. We focus on this great narrative and its denouement in nearly obsessive ways. Why? Perhaps because our central Jewish story is about transition, travel, hitting the road. It's a core narrative for Jews. To paraphrase Descartes, we left, therefore we are. Our essential nature as a people was formed by this first exodus. When we find ourselves in slavery, either physical, psychological, moral, or spiritual, we must, as Jews, choose to leave. And seeing the way our ancestors did it, against all odds, to find a new life of ethical freedom and covenant with God, that too can inspire us today. I always associate this portion, this Torah portion of B'Shalach, this Shabbat Shirah, with America's promise of freedom and justice for all. For our Jewish poetry slam this morning, we have Emma Lazarus's famous classic stanzas dedicated to and inscribed on the Statue of Liberty in New York's harbor. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome, her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor the twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Those words on the Statue of Liberty, penned by Emma Lazarus, a Sephardic Jew of America, have great meaning. There is no more memorable statement of the American dream than the promise of safe haven and a fair shake to people who have known only oppression. And there is no better embrace of the promise of Exodus and of freedom given in this week's Torah portion of B'Shalach than those words. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, author Jen Glantz, will tell us what led her to become always a bridesmaid for hire. Find out about that in her book when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates, serving Tucsonans living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
Aseinu, aseinu.
Leaders of numerous major Jewish organizations have spoken out against President Trump's executive order banning persons from seven Muslim countries, including all Syrian refugees, from entering the United States. The ban temporarily on hold due to a series of federal court decisions. Among them, the Anti-Defamation League's Jonathan Greenblatt has compared it to the refusal of the United States to allow over 900 refugees aboard the ship called the St. Louis to land here during World War II, resulting in their forced return to Europe and their deaths in Nazi concentration camps. David Harris of the American Jewish Committee called it unjust and contrary to the perceptions of a compassionate America while reinforcing anti-Muslim stereotypes. And the former American ambassador to Israel, Daniel Shapiro, said he was sickened by Mr. Trump's immigration policies. A schoolbook publisher in Berlin has apologized for using anti-Semitic illustrations in a textbook now being used in German schools. The illustrations, which have been papered over in existing copies and will be eliminated in future editions, shows the euro with a large mouth devouring all of Europe, over which is printed the Rothschild Bank. The apology adds that the illustrations were taken from the work of one David Dees, whom the Anti-Defamation League has labeled a notorious anti-Semite, whose other cartoons include portraying Hillary Clinton as a zombie and Donald Trump with a chain around his neck which reads, "The Fed and the Star of David." The State of Israel has granted temporary resident status to 100 orphan Syrian children whose parents were killed during the current civil war in that country. The children will live with Arab Israeli families who have volunteered to adopt them, and after 4 years may be accorded full citizenship. Over 2,000 Syrians have been treated in Israeli hospitals for wounds suffered during the Syrian conflict, regardless of their particular allegiances. Two Orthodox rabbis, one from New Jersey and one from New York, have asked the federal appeals court in Philadelphia to overturn their convictions for allegedly hiring assailants to assault and injure Jewish husbands who refused to grant their wives a Jewish divorce, since according to Jewish law, only the male can grant the divorce. The men were found guilty in 2015 of conspiring to commit kidnapping and were each given prison sentences ranging from 3 to 8 years. And a space team from a private Israeli company called Space IL is one of four such teams competing in a contest to see who will be the first to land a vehicle on the moon no later than December of this year. The other contestants are from India, Japan, and Germany. The winner will receive a prize of $20 million, which the Israeli company has pledged to devote to the promotion of science in Israel. The event is sponsored by the billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk, who is better known as the chief executive officer of Tesla Motors. And that's the Two Jewish News.
We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. She's new author, Jen Glantz. Her book is called Always a Bridesmaid for Hire, Stories on Growing Up, Looking for Love, and Walking Down the Aisle for Complete Strangers. What's the funniest story that you've had serving as a professional bridesmaid?
Oh my goodness. I had a situation once where the mother of the bride decided to decorate the wedding herself. So she surprised the bride by the morning of the wedding having boxes delivered to the wedding, and inside the boxes were these stuffed decorative birds that she started putting out on all of the tables, and the bride nearly had a heart attack. You know, she wanted nothing like this on her wedding day. So my job was to, when the mom wasn't looking, hide the birds and, you know, make sure the decorations were back to normal. And it was just a hilarious experience because sometimes, you know, we know our mothers, they have the best intentions for us, but it doesn't always come off like that, especially on the wedding day.
Why do maybe it's obvious, but it seems to me that people put a tremendous amount of pressure on themselves to have a perfect wedding. How do you advise people who are thinking like that?
They do, and I think a lot of that is just because of traditions that we've seen in the past. social media these days, comparing and contrasting everybody's weddings. And in my eyes, I think that you should really stop going over the top. Instead, create a wedding of your own dreams and not what everybody else wants you to have. And I think we're always trying to outspend one another. We're always trying to do things differently than other people, you know, trying to one-up them. But because of that, we kind of go a little bit crazy and we spend more money than we have on an eight-hour celebration.
8 hours is kind of a long time. But when you consider that people are hoping to be married for the rest of their lives, you know, in a way, we're sort of in the same business, but the Jewish part of the ceremony is usually 30 minutes. The, you know, the receptions, why do people put so much value on this?
I think because they think it's the only way to kick off a marriage together is by having this gigantic celebration. But I think it should be reversed. I think that the big celebration should happen after you've been married 10, 15, 20, 30 years, rather than after, you know, being married for day one. I think that marriage can be a very complicated thing. And when we have a big celebration like this, maybe it puts a whole strain and pressure-filled situation on top of a new marriage. It's almost, in my eyes, a little ridiculous that we throw a party this large for the start of a marriage that, you know, needs to take a lot of work and needs to have two people really learn more about each other and really learn how to, you know, handle each other over the next endless amounts of years. So I've always thought it was a little crazy that so much, you know, focus is put on this one day.
So what's your ideal wedding?
For me, it's something very simple. My goal is one day to get married and spend less than $1,000 on the wedding. I just want something very simple that, of course, includes pizza. That's my only want for my future wedding.
What flavor? Or is it going to be a variety of pizzas? Are you going, this is a very important question, are you going with, you know, the deep dish, wood-fired? What are you looking for here?
I love that. In my eyes, it's going to be cheap dollar pizza from New York City or one of those generic brands that we can get anywhere in the country, like a Domino's or Papa John's. That's the kind of pizza that I adore. And, you know, I wanted to have a little bit of my personality on my wedding day.
You have to be very careful with those big white dresses with all the crinoline when the cheese and the tomato sauce start to drip.
Oh, yeah. I plan to wear, you know, a human bib over my dress so that I don't get any stains on it, because I can be quite the messy eater.
Does it matter to you what denomination the people are that are having the wedding? Does a Jewish wedding come out differently for you?
It doesn't. You know what? At first, before I started the job, I had only been to primarily Jewish weddings in my life since I grew up with a very strong Jewish background. And, you know, a lot of my college friends were Jewish because I was in a Jewish sorority. So I was really only going to Jewish weddings. But since I started the business, I've been to every single type of wedding, any denomination. And it's been interesting to see the differences in ceremonies, especially the traditions that other religions have. So it's always great going to a Jewish wedding. I really, you know, feel extreme connection with them, but I've loved learning other traditions as well.
So as you say in the book, you decided, look, maybe this could be a professional thing. You put an ad up on Craigslist. Tell us about what happened.
I did. So after deciding, you know, after my roommate actually told me that I was a professional bridesmaid because she had seen me being asked to be a bridesmaid so many times, I figured that the best place to test this weird, crazy idea was on a very weird, crazy website, one that my very protective Jewish mother told me never to go on, which was Craigslist.com. And that's where I put up an ad. It was an anonymous ad offering my services to strangers around the world as a professional bridesmaid. I wrote the ad, I posted on a Friday, and by Monday morning, I had received hundreds of emails from brides all over the world who were interested in the service.
How did you feel? Like, how do you price being a bridesmaid or sometimes even a maid of honor for hire?
A lot of what I did was determine how many hours it would take me to fulfill that job. And then from there, I put an hourly rate. So that was the best way for me to figure out my package pricing, especially because there was no other business I could really go off of for guidance. So a lot of what I did at the start was trial and error. I was a poetry major in college. I didn't have any business experience. So a lot of what I did was figure out packages to offer based on the needs that were coming through to my inbox, based on what the brides were asking me for. And from there, I made about 3 or 4 packages and established a price just based on an hourly fee on how many hours I thought it would take me to do the job for them.
And how many hours does it take to be a proper bridesmaid?
That's a great question. And a lot of times that is determined on the bride. How many sessions does she want before the wedding? A lot of what we do is spend time before the wedding. I help her out as her on-call therapist, her personal assistant. I make sure she has everything she needs, whether it's moral support and just answers to any wedding questions. So usually simply just it's determined by how many pre-wedding sessions she wants and then how many hours on the day of the wedding that she needs me there.
What's the strangest request you've gotten from a bride?
Wow. I've had to do some pretty wild things for brides in the past. A lot of times I'm, you know, told I have to call the mother of the bride and pretty much tell her to, you know, stop stressing out the bride. So I get to do a lot of dirty work for the bride, whether that's talking to bridesmaids and maid of honors and telling them to calm down, or, you know, handling a mother of the bride who's trying to either sabotage the wedding or just stressing out the bride way too much.
That's a stereotype, of course. You know, the bride's mother is driving everybody crazy. How do you say that?
Yeah, you know what? I am really good at working with people, especially mothers, and a lot of times it's putting it into perspective, letting them know that, you know, the energy they're bringing to the table, it has good intentions. You know, they're really an important part of the wedding day, but right now the bride is just really, really nervous and stressed out, and, you know, she just needs support from everybody around them. So it's just a matter of finding a way to talk to the mother or talk to the maid of honors. But, you know, the mother of the bride, they have great intentions. It's just a very emotional day for everybody involved.
You talk at one point in the book about feeling like a superhero. Okay, so what would your title and costume be?
Ooh, I would say bridesmaid warrior, and I think my costume would be a bridesmaid dress that was ripped up because, you know, this is by no means a glamorous job. If I'm putting on that bridesmaid dress, I leave the wedding with blisters all over myself and headaches, and, you know, it takes emotional toll on a person to do this job. So I think that would be, you know, my costume. Maybe a beat-up bridesmaid dress with wings or something so that I could fly home after the wedding.
How do people pick the astonishing colors of bridesmaids' dresses?
A lot of times it's just based on the colors they've already chosen for their wedding, and sometimes it's just based on what colors will look best on the women who have to wear the dress.
And sometimes it seems to be based on what color will look worst on the women who wear the dress. I'm sorry, that's probably a little cynical, but...
No, it happens. I think that sometimes brides, you know, pick dresses for all different reasons, and of course there's, you know, the common thing that they must choose it because they know their bridesmaids will look bad in it, and I've never seen anything like that before. I think that the brides do have good intentions when it comes to the dress, and I think if anything, they're trying to please everybody, which is almost impossible to do, because when you have a group of women who are all wearing the same thing, everyone has different body types and styles, and it can be very hard to choose a one-size-fits-all dress.
So is there an aftermarket for bridesmaids' dresses?
There is. There's places where you can sell them used. You can rent them. There's definitely places you can do that. You won't make too much money off of a used bridesmaid dress, but it might be better off doing that than holding it in the back of your closet forever.
Because really, chance of using it again is just not super high. So what's the best advice you give to a bride at a Jewish wedding who's going to be put up on a chair wearing a dress that's hard to even walk in?
I would say not to eat too much before because you might get really nauseous. I've never seen a bride actually throw up after, you know, getting lifted in the chair, but I have seen some faces that look like they're about to. So, you know, maybe save yourself from drinking too much or eating, you know, a huge meal right before you go up in the chair. And as for the dress, I think the best thing you can do is, you know, just make sure that you sit still in the chair and try not to fidget too much. I remember at my bat mitzvah, getting lifted up in the chair was, you know, really fun, but also pretty terrifying at the same time. So you might just want to hold on to the chair rather than onto your dress.
I can also suggest finding the burliest guys possible to do the lifting, just for safety.
Yeah, definitely make sure you do that, and tell your bridesmaids this is one job they don't have to participate in.
I have one major rabbinic tip for Jewish weddings. Insist that they use white kosher wine in the ceremony.
Oh, have you seen that thing happen with the red? Yeah.
Yeah, one of the first weddings I ever did, I was a cantor. This is a long time ago, and the bride was wearing this spectacular dress that probably was more expensive than my annual salary. The groom handed her the wine. She went to drink it. He bumped it. It went straight down the front of her dress. You know, this just gigantic red. Yeah, yeah. And if it had been white wine, it wouldn't have shown up in the photos.
Right. You know what? That's a good tip. I remember at my bat mitzvah, I was eating something from like a cheese fondue stand, and cheese spilled all over my dress. And if you look closely in photos, you can definitely see those stains. So it makes for funny memories in the future, but not so much on the day of.
What's the favorite wedding you've done?
The favorite wedding I ever did was for one of my friends, where I really admired how she read her own vows during the ceremony. Her and her fiance, they wrote the vows together, and they read them, and I really admired just her whole style of the wedding. It was less of a traditional wedding in the sense that her decorations were very personal to her and him. him. And she even let the bridesmaids wear whatever they wanted. So it was really cool. I got to wear the dress that my mom wore to my bat mitzvah about 13 years earlier, which was really, really fun.
Let's say your best friend is getting married. Do you want to be a bridesmaid?
I do. I mean, I've definitely been a bridesmaid for many of my friends in the past and, you know, still am as I have this job and still will be in the future. I think it's a wonderful honor. I just think you need to be smart about how you do it in the sense that you need to make a budget at the start and stick to it. You don't want to overspend as a bridesmaid, and you really don't want to stress yourself out doing things you don't have time for either.
What's the biggest mistake that brides make?
The biggest mistake that brides make is spending too much money on their wedding. They think they need to spend $10,000 in flowers and have a dress that's $6,000. You can really have the best wedding of your dreams on a budget, making sure that you don't overspend on these little things nobody even notices.
And when you come into a situation that's kind of a mess, you talked about, you know, the bride having fired her maid of honor or making you talk to her mom because it's too much of a disaster. Do you ever come into one where you just don't think the wedding should happen?
I do, and I've had some people, you know, tell me that they don't want the wedding to happen. I once worked with a bride who 5 minutes before the wedding pulls me aside and tells me she doesn't like the groom and she doesn't want to do this. So, you know, sometimes I can sense that something is off with the couple, and usually that does come out to be true. And, you know, in this instance, she was relying on me for advice on what to do. And, you know, that was just proof in the moment that sometimes people really like to talk to strangers about things they don't want to talk to their friends about. She had a room full of friends there, but she wanted to tell me that she didn't want to go ahead with this wedding because she knew I would give her honest advice.
What did you say?
I said, listen, you don't have to. You know, if you want to leave right now, I'll get us a taxi and we'll leave. You don't have to do this. And I think that by giving her the out was something that she just needed to hear.
And then she went ahead with the wedding.
Of course she did. I understand that. I think at that point, you know, when she's 300 guests waiting for her, that she's going to go ahead with it, but it doesn't mean their marriage is going to last. And I do understand that. I think that love and marriage is very complicated, and it's so easy to judge when you're on the outside of it. But when you have a role like mine, when you really are up close and personal with the bride, in these very emotional situations, you begin to really learn the psychology, you know, the psychology behind love and people.
How long do you want to do this for?
I plan to do this for I think there will be a time when I will want to retire, but I don't really think age has a limit with this kind of job. I've worked weddings where there was bridesmaids who were 60 years old, so I definitely can see myself doing this for quite some time.
The book is called Always a Bridesmaid for Hire by Jen Glantz. It's out this week. Congratulations on getting the book published and on bringing it to the world. And what's your final piece of advice for someone about to get into this entire wedding business?
I would say take a deep breath. It might be so, you know, fun and easy just to rush right into everything, but realize there's no deadline on the things you have to do. Spend some time before you set a date. Book vendors who you feel comfortable with and who are not ripping you off. And in the end, plan the wedding of your dreams and nobody else's.
It's great advice. Speaking from, you know, my professional perspective, my favorite piece of advice came from a young couple that said, look, Rabbi, we're not terribly interested in the ceremony. We're just interested in the marriage.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Everyone wants something different for their wedding. And in the end, it should be what you want.
Thanks so much, Jen. And where else can people go to find out more about you?
Thank you. People can go to jenglantz.com or email me at jen@bridesmaidforhire.com.
And that's JenGlantz. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Dr. Joel Hoffman, author of the new book, The Bible Doesn't Say That. And of course, listen to all of our Too Jewish podcasts on iTunes or stream them from our TooJewishRadio.com website or friend us or both on Facebook. Our playout this Super Bowl Sunday morning of Too Jewish comes from the great klezmer clarinetist Giora Feidman. It's appropriate to a show about weddings. It's his Klezmer's Freilach, an entirely appropriate bit of music for, well, a wedding celebration. My friends, have a happy Super Bowl Sunday, a fun upcoming festival of Tu B'Shvat, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.